What's up, you guys? Movie retrospective time. So, I know that we covered the 1988 remake of The Blob, which is actually quite awesome if you haven't seen it. But, surprisingly, I don't think that we had ever done the original 1958 Blob, and that was the one that won the poll. So now we're talking about it.
Yeah.
Steve McQueen's starring role, like his first starring role, really. Yeah. I don't think he had done, I think... The funny thing, this is what I heard. I don't know if this is true or not. But I heard that he actually wasn't even in the running to be in this because I think he was more like known as a stage actor and not even really that famous. I guess there was a guy whose name I can't remember who the casting director or the producer or whoever like wanted to be the lead in this movie. And he went to see this guy in a play and... It so happened that Steve McQueen was that guy's understudy.
Hmm.
And so he ended up seeing Steve McQueen and going, hey, that guy's great. Let's put him in the movie.
Upstaged.
He got upstaged by Steve McQueen. Yeah. Which, you know, if you're going to be upstaged by somebody, it might as well be Steve McQueen. So, yeah.
McQueen was cool, man. He was cool in real life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, obviously, he didn't really...
he didn't really fit the part. Didn't look the part, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, he was supposed to be 17, yeah. And he's 28. And, yeah. As you know, I'm not being mean, but he actually does look a little bit older than 28, just in the sense that people back then tended to look older than nowadays.
And he looks tough.
Yeah.
And that's what kind of role that is, he's good at, you know.
Yeah.
Kind
this,
of a
this
noir
one is kind
private
of...
investigator. He was kind of something that... He was kind of... In his day, a cross between Sylvester Stallone and maybe Harrison Ford, you know what I mean? He got those kind of roles.
Yeah,
that's really what you're doing.
And that was kind of more his strength. I feel like.
Not a high school student.
You got to Yeah, you got to start somewhere. And he's fine in this. He's actually like pretty fun, but. You know, you can tell, obviously, he's not a teenager. So some of this stuff about, ooh, let's sneak out and meet my girlfriend and, like, talking to his parents, I'm like, him and his parents kind of look like the same age. But, yeah. It's pretty fucked up.
But he was a Stallone of the 60s and the 70s.
Now, because he didn't really take this role all that seriously, and he didn't think that this movie was going to be successful, boy, was he wrong on that. He only took a payment, I think it's either $2,500 or $3,000, because he's like, hey, I got food to buy and rent to pay, like, right now. They offered him 10% of the, you know, theater gross, and he's like, no, this movie's not gonna...
Damn.
I know. It's like, well, you can't really... I mean, hindsight's 20/20, but he's probably, like, fucking kicking himself for the rest. He's like, I could have had the... I could have had 10% of, like, the fucking Blob, which was, like, a massive success.
Yeah, put his name in lights, though. He got it back later.
It did, yeah. So it's just kind of like, probably in the short term, he was probably like, God damn it. It's like, because 10% of how much it made, I mean, I think...
He was in
like
one of the best movies ever called Bullet.
Yeah, we did a review.
Yeah, we did a review on it. Real good movie that I hadn't seen up until recently.
That was kind of his strength. But I feel like, so The Blob, this kind of came about at an interesting time. It's in color, but came out in 1958. Now, I'm not entirely sure because I'm not, you know, I don't know every film that came out around this time. But, you know, because the 1950s, that was sort of like the burgeoning... teen market, like, you know, that you had a drive-in theaters, and we used to like kind of the whole thing where teenagers were first seen as sort of like a demographic that could be marketed to, that had like disposable income, you know what I mean? So there was that. There was also these kind of like films that were really popular in the 50s that were like teenage delinquent films, you know, most famous one probably being Rebel Without a Cause, but there was like a lot of like really low budget ones and stuff as well. And obviously the 1950s were real big for, you know, alien invader type movies. As far as I'm aware, The Blob is either the first film or among the first films to have combined those two genres, and also might be the first film or among the first films that made the teenagers the heroes. Because, as I said prior to this, teenagers in movies were usually seen as like delinquents. They were like in a biker gang or, you know, they were railing against the man or whatever. So they were kind of seen as like, not criminals necessarily, but you know, again, like raging against this. Yeah, that kind of thing. So this was kind of the first one that I think really portrayed, and I don't think they did it on purpose, because I think this was just like a cheap movie that they made to play in drive-ins. But this is kind of the first one that went a long way toward, I don't know, like kind of putting the generation gap kind of on the screen, you know what I mean? But in a way that like everybody could understand. Because the teenagers are the first ones to know that something bad is happening, that, you know, that the blob is, like, killing people. But the cops and stuff like that in the small town, like, absolutely do not listen to them and just think they're, again, a bunch of delinquents and they're just making stuff up for shits and giggles.
Well, they think they're pranking.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That they're just, like, making stuff up to be funny.
They're making fun of cops and
yeah. Which, you know, maybe they... And also, they kind of established, too, this isn't, like, a huge plot point, but they do establish that the crabbiest cop, the one that's just like, these fucking... that guy, wasn't his wife or somebody in his family was, like, hit by a 17-year-old driver. I don't remember if it killed her or not. Yeah. But so he's, like, kind of bitter against teenagers as a whole, and he thinks they're all just a bunch of hellions.
It also,
you know?
Said... He also talks about he has a badass war record.
That too, yeah.
So he's a World War II veteran.
These kids today, they don't know.
He's not old, though.
No.
He's 30.
That's what I'm saying. It's 40, like everybody 30. In this, including like a lot of the teenagers, look like the same age.
Yeah.
Even though I'm sure that like a lot of them probably weren't. But because people looked older back then, like people that were just in their 20s, like looked like they were in their 30s or 40s, like somebody nowadays. So I kind of feel like it's funny because whenever you see Steve McQueen in there, like talking to like his dad comes and stuff, it's him and his dad don't like they did actually get like an older dude, like with gray hair, like to play his dad. So that's a little more, but it still seems like, I mean, he's still very clearly an adult. So
they're just trying to show the generational differences because, man, those dudes that fucking went off to World War II at 18 came back only a couple years later fucking prematurely aged and drinking themselves to death and fucking pissed off that, you know, that they had to do that and nobody else had to do it. And then, the younger generations are now enjoying the damn middle class lifestyle that was kind of built on the back of those guys in World War II. There's a whole thing about how the government did it. Fucking, they were trying to re-civilize fucking a whole civilization or a whole generation of people coming back from fucking World War II, trying to get them out of those cities and putting them in the damn suburbs. There's whole fucking documentaries on how they did it, and Hollywood helped. But that's kind of what they're getting at. Fucking, you know what I mean? That the kids, and this is kind of across the spectrum of the movies of this era, the teenagers are bored and pranking and doing fucking crazy shit because they now have the luxury to do so. They have the luxury of being bored because they're growing up in these badass fucking suburban communities that have everything kind of handed to them.
Yeah, and they're safe and
they're
like
safe.
So they don't
and
have anything
law
to really
order
worry about.
And they're toilet paper in houses and drinking and driving and having parties and dressing up to go to a party. And that was something that the older generation in those days, they didn't grow up that way. They grew up fucking either in city apartments, working in factories, or out on some farm without houses and shit, living in shacks. Which they show a dude living in a shack.
Yeah, the first victim of the blob.
Yeah, is an old guy.
The old guy.
Who lives like it back in the 1800s, which really they lived that way up until the 20s and 30s. And so Mississippi was like that in the 30s, you know. And there were some people that, while the 60s are rolling around, there's still some people, old people out on the edges of society, still lived in those houses, like shotgun shacks. They eventually had electricity, but I guess some of them didn't have electricity.
I love that the guy, I was under the impression that everybody kind of knew who that dude was, maybe, because it's like a small town. This was shot in Pennsylvania, by the way, not a Hollywood film at all. It was an independent film. But, so the old guy, they take him to, like, the doctor after the blob gets on, because he's the one that finds the meteor, you know, that the blob comes out of, in a scene that was homaged later in Creepshow, in the Lonesome Death of Geordie Verrill, you know, where Stephen King's like, meteor shit. They kind of shot it the same way, like, in Creepshow.
Yeah, it was a lot more goofy, blob. Though, than this. When you think about it, the meteor shit, fucking, that was Stephen King, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Stephen King played that guy.
Yeah.
But, I think the strong point in this movie, I remember it as a kid, saw it on television. I think one of them Saturday matinee type monster movies, you know, when I was probably about 10. And this movie stuck with me because it had a credible monster. Most monsters from monster movies of this era, the monster wasn't credible. It had a fucking credible alien monster in it. Just a damn amoeba, basically. An amoeba that survived in an asteroid. That is all scientifically plausible.
Fun fact, this is Neil deGrasse Tyson's favorite movie monster from a scientific perspective.
Yeah.
Because he thinks it's the most realistic.
Yeah, it'd be plausible.
Which, like I said, yeah, he's probably right about that.
Meteors touch down all the time. And the temperatures inside a big meteor as it fucking burns up through the atmosphere really don't get high enough to kill a lot of microorganisms. So theoretically, it could survive. That's why that panspermia may be plausible between Earth, Mars, and Venus. Material's been traded over the millions and millions of years. So life may have started on Mars, and it may have been delivered here, kind of like what you see in this movie. But it wouldn't be a visible... This blob, when you see it, it's the size of an orange.
At first,
it's
but
the size
of an orange. But then, obviously, it gets bigger and bigger.
It gets much bigger.
Like, as it eats people.
Right.
Which it does.
In reality, it would be microscopic. You wouldn't even see it. That's how it would arrive.
But I'm just saying, we've talked about many times that in sci-fi movies, the scariest alien to me is the one in The Thing, because it can, you know, it can mimic anything.
Yeah.
But the second scariest is probably the blob, because it's just like a gelatinous mass, you can't reason with it, and it just comes to Earth and just starts consuming everything. It just gets bigger and bigger until it, like, would eventually, the like, alien, take over the whole planet.
The alien from Squirm, kind of plausible. The alien from...
Alien from Squirm, that was a killer worm movie.
Yeah. Oh, no, not Squirm. Slither. The alien from Slither is kind of plausible. A bunch of damn worms that are in a colony that remember where they've been and stuff, and take over humans, and kind of like across... It's kind of like The Thing. That, you know, what's his name? Guy from Walking Dead is in it. Shit, what's that guy's name? Guy from Mississippi. He stars in that one. Anyways, what's that? You remember that guy's name?
Yeah,
he played Henry Lee.
Yeah, I know. I can't
remember his name.
I can't remember his name.
And then another one that's kind of plausible is the xenomorph, something like that. Yeah, I think that's kind of plausible. I mean, it's more complicated, but yeah. So it's because the alien is plausible is why it's remembered. Only thing I say against this movie is I didn't think the theme song matched the fucking tone of the movie. I think it needed a...
The theme song was written by Burt Bacharach, of all people.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good theme song. It just doesn't...
It is.
It just doesn't match the tone of the movie. It should have been something... It should have had just an eerie kind of...
Although this movie does have kind of like a little bit of a goofy tone to it, especially in the first...
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, especially in like the first 30, 40 minutes, because honestly, like after, like, you have the old guy who I was going to say before... I was trying to say that it always made me laugh the way, like, they took him to the doctor and, like, he just calling him old timer.
Yeah.
And that guy, he's been in, like, a shit ton of other movies and TV shows, and he always plays old man. Like, that doesn't even have a name or anything like that.
Yeah, I was just old.
Yeah, he just plays the old man.
Yeah.
So he gets killed, you know, and, like, people in the doctor's office get killed, but you don't really see it all that much. And then there's, like, a 30-minute... like thing in the film where it's just basically Steve McQueen and his girlfriend, who's played by Anita Corso, by the way, who was Helen Crump on the Andy Griffith Show. She and they're just trying to like convince the adults that there's actually something going on, that there's like a monster out there, and the cops and the authorities and their parents and stuff like not believing them. So I do kind of feel like it's a little bit slow in that area until it kind of gets to a thing where like the blob starts attacking like the movie theater, the grocery store, and the movie theater and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, so yeah, there's that. Now, so as I was saying, this was actually originally, now this was not a Hollywood film. Like I said, it was an independent film. I believe it was made for maybe $100,000, $120,000, something like that. And it was directed by a guy named Irvin Yeaworth, who actually did over 400 movies that were like motivational films, educational films, and religious films, including he directed a bunch of TV specials for Billy Graham, the televangelist, which I thought was really funny. So they ended up like raising a lot of money, like I said, trying to get into like the teen market and shit like that. The idea for the film, interestingly, came from... the discovery of, I guess, what back then they called star jelly, which is kind of like that, you know, that gelatinous stuff that sometimes, like, falls from the sky, or, like, they find it in trees and fields and they're not entirely sure what it is?
The stuff that falls out of damn airplane bathrooms?
It's probably, that's probably what it is. Exactly, and they're not entirely sure what it is. Like it might be something, like, biological, like some frog spawn or some shit like that, but they didn't really know what it was. So it was just, like, these little gelatinous blobs. So I guess that's kind of where the idea came from at first, that it's, like, what if these actually came from outer space and they were, like, amoebas and they started, like, eating everybody. So the thing about it was that these globs, which have been found kind of like all over the world, they're, for whatever reason, there's like some folklore that grew up about them that they only fell during meteor showers. So that's kind of like where the urban legend is, kind of where the idea for the blob came from. And matter of fact, when they were writing the script, a movie was supposed to be called The Molten Meteor. And then for a time it was called The Glob, but then they changed it to The Blob. And like I said, I kind of feel like they wanted that upbeat little theme song because I'm not really sure why. I don't know, because it is kind of goofy. There is a lot of character, like goofy character stuff. Like there are scenes in there where, you know, like Steve McQueen, they find like him and his girlfriend, right? They find the old guy that has the blob like eating his arm, essentially. And they're like, hey, you know, old timer, whatever. We'll take him to the doctor. So they take him to the doctor's office and the doctor says, you should kind of go back to where you found him at and see if you could find like some other evidence, like to figure out like what the fuck this is so we can help him out. And immediately they go out in front of the doctor's office and there's another car there with his three friends in there. They're like, oh, we need to drag race. And I'm like, do you remember that there's a guy who's like maybe dying in there and like in horrible agonizing pain? And it's like, you were kind of supposed to, you had one job, Steve McQueen. And so he doesn't do it. So then there's like a very, very long extended sequence where they do like a drag race. The cars are going backwards and then the cop pulls him over and he's like trying to like charm his way out of it and all this other kind of stuff. And then he's like, oh yeah, I forgot. We were supposed to go help that dying old man. And like the thing, and I was just kind of like, yeah, man, that's like, that's fucked up.
Well, I guess
up.
That's what the writers thought teenagers do.
Yeah, I guess
they
don't. So.
They remember shit. They remember shit better than a fucking full grown person.
Well, that's what I mean. And I kind of feel like if you had seen something as horrifying as what was left of, as what was eating that dude's hand, I'm kind of feeling like, yeah, no time to drag race right now. I gotta sort this shit out because, you know, the guy was clearly in a lot of pain. And it was funny too, we were like laughing about it because I feel like the doctor's like looking at the dude's hand with like all this fucking jello shit on it and it's like, probably we need to amputate that, but the guy's like calling around
asking about it. I'm like, man, cut that shit off. He had to get the
consulting
nurse.
Consulting the books.
he had to wait till the nurse shows up, though, to help him do it.
I guess so, but
I think that's what, but he's just calling everybody and I'm like, dude, man, cut that shit off. It's getting bigger.
Yeah, I mean, you would think.
Procrastinating and telling everybody about it. Yeah.
Come here, you got to see this shit. It's crazy. And
it's
like
absorbing
the
his flesh at an amazing rate.
Yeah, and the old guy's like, help me! God damn it! It's like, bro, you know.
I was just like, man, put a tourniquet on that shit. It's like every battlefield fucking soldier, fucking put a tourniquet on it and a fucking cleaver and cut that shit off.
I mean, you think that was immediately.
Yeah.
Once you realized what was happening, then like, yeah, because otherwise it's going to consume his whole entire body. And he seemed to twig onto the fact that it was consuming the flesh pretty quickly. So I was like, yeah, at that point, the arm's a loss, okay? So you might as well just fucking do that. And then like the nurse gets eaten, right? Although they don't show that. She kind of gets...
She didn't even make a scream.
Yeah, she was just, like, in the office going, oh, no, oh, my God. It was, like, because the blob, like, starts out, like you said, about the size of an orange.
Yeah.
And then, like, it eats the old guy and then gets about the size of maybe, like, a soccer ball, kind of.
Well, I think it got as big as that guy. I think of the mass. It increased, you know, it took your mass. Remember? Because when it was on his arm, it was the size of his arm.
Yeah.
And then once it absorbed him, it was about the size of a man after that. Just kind of in one
like
area.
Like rolling around.
Rolling, yeah. I think it just converted your mass. And then it was big enough to where, you know, the cop eventually says it must have swallowed 40 or 50 people.
Yeah.
And that was about how big it was.
And it got redder, too.
Yeah.
It was made of...
The effects were pretty good, especially for the time. They used some cartoon animation in certain scenes, miniatures. You can see sometimes it's a small ball of goo.
It's silicone, actually.
Silicone.
With red dye in it.
Yeah, you can see it's a small ball, and then behind it is like a cutout photograph.
Like a postcard.
And it comes through.
Like the movie about the killer crickets.
Yeah.
Like the giant crickets where it's like a building. Yeah. Like they have like a postcard of like buildings in Chicago and then like lead crickets. Like,
you can see they got fucking pictures of cards and shit. But you know,
I mean, it was 1958. It's charming.
Yeah, and they didn't have any money.
And you know what's really clever, actually, is that how they got the blob to move and like look like it was crawling was what they would do was they had, you know, it's about that big. And so they put it like on like a card or whatever, and then they put the picture in the back, and then they hooked the camera to like the floor thing so that when you tilted it, it would go like that, but the camera wouldn't show that it was tilting. It's so it looked like it was,
you're changing the G-force on it.
Yeah, so that's how they did it. And it's just like, I'm like, wow, that's a pretty clever idea. But like, obviously, you can see that sometimes like it's miniatures and stuff, but that's okay. I mean, as I said, it's like a great idea for a monster. You know what's funny is that the actual blob that was in the movie, that still exists. Like a film collector bought it and still has it, and every year in the town in Pennsylvania where this was shot, they have Blob Fest because that movie theater is still there. That diner is still there where where they tried to burn it. That all that shit's still there, and everybody in the town like gets together to like reenact like the scene where everybody's screaming and running out of the theater.
Yeah.
And that guy always brings the blob like in a bucket.
Yeah.
And you can like have your picture taken with the actual blob. Mm. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Like I was watching Cinemassacre earlier, and James on there is like a huge fan of the blob, the original blob. And he's been to Blob Fest before, and he's just like, that's the funnest thing ever. Like everything is blob related.
I like the movie.
It's a fun, I'm going to say, and maybe this is a controversial opinion, I like the remake better just because it's gorier, darker, more fast-paced. But this one, for a 50s movie, this is actually a really fun 50s movie. Don't expect, like, a lot of gore. Don't expect a lot of, I mean, it suffers from the same thing that a lot of 50s movies suffer from, where it's just, a lot of times, it's, like, people sitting around talking about shit.
It's not as bad.
But it's not as bad as some of the ones, because the characters in this are actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, and they're usually running from one location to the next and talking about how they're going to stop this thing and trying to convince adults who are like, oh, it can't be. But then finally, you know, the police lieutenant believes him. He suspects him.
Yeah, he's actually
the truth from the very beginning. He thought there was something to it. It's just a good flick. The only thing I would have done is I would have changed the direction a little bit and kind of maybe toned down some of the goofiness. You could have kept that. I think I just would have changed the score and made the score a little bit more like The Thing or like Alien, and to give it kind of a more somber, kind of a fucking threatening tone in the backdrop. It doesn't have that all the time. There are certain scenes where like when they're in the meat locker.
Yeah.
Where you're like, okay,
And it's like coming under the door.
And it sounds like bom, bom. Like,
and then you
like,
think the dog gets eaten.
Right, yeah.
The dog doesn't get eaten. The dog is fine.
Right. There, certain scenes, they got it right. But really, the opening scenes should have been, they shouldn't have had the blob theme. I would have used that.
Although I like that song, though.
This would note I would have done. I wouldn't have gotten rid of that.
Yeah.
I would have used it as a radio spot
to
promote the fucking movie.
Yeah.
But not really have it in the movie except in the ending credits.
Yeah.
Or maybe not even in the ending credits, but just used it as a promotion, a promotional song to hype the movie.
Yeah.
But when you went to see the movie, it was nothing but just kind of like something out of Alien or something out of The Thing. You know, the new thing. John Carpenter's The Thing. And I think a score like that would have fucking been a lot better on this.
Because this actually does, like you said, there are some scenes, even though there's a lot of goofiness in it, it's one, it's not as goofy as a lot of 50s movies. And there are some scenes in it that are actually, like, pretty creepy and tense.
Yeah.
Like the part, like, in the doctor's office, like, where the nurse gets eaten, the part where they're in the meat locker.
And then the diner.
The part where they're in the diner and they're, like, all down in the thing because the cops are, like, trying to electrocute the blob and it doesn't work. And then they're, like, down in the basement of the diner. That hilarious scene where, like, the girlfriend's little brother, in his little feety pajamas, comes out, like, runs out and tries to shoot the blob with his little Hopalong Cassidy pistol or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I think that's, like, really funny. That little kid out there is like, hey, he's, like, the bravest kid ever. But, yeah, I do like that. all the characters in this, even though a lot of them weren't really, I mean, they were really, really early in their careers, or they weren't, like, really professional actors. Like, a lot of them were local, like, were local theater actors, or were just, like, people that... And so they...
There's a lot of face acting.
Yeah, they have, like, a lot of hometown charm to them.
Yeah, they do.
And it's kind of like, you know, when you have the cops, and you have the... They have little personality quirks, like, one, like, plays chess with this other guy, like, this other cop on the radio, and they all have their own little things that they do, and I just think that's
kind of
cool.
There was some good touches to the extras, like, they call them the teenagers. They're not teenagers. These are people in their 20s, all right, and 30s. They had some pretty cool 50s hot rods with aftermarket paint that was pretty good for the time.
I did let that, yeah, that car was cool.
You could see that one of those cars kind of had a metallic or a diamond flake paint job on them, which cars didn't have that until much later. Well, you see stock cars, what shit was painted with. It was terrible-looking paint. Almost looked like gloss house paint. That's what a lot of cars were painted with back in the days. There was just nothing prismatic or deep about those colors. So, but they had that one car that had it look like diamond flake.
And that paint, it was kind of like a cool, like, what color would you call
it?
It was kind of reddish magenta, but like reddish purple. It was kind of cool, or kind of pinky.
Right. So they had three or four hot rods that a modern observer who doesn't know the 50s really wouldn't really notice that there's any difference from the other 50s cars. But when you know it, 50s fucking stock cars looked fucking, no, that's aftermarket shit, you know what I mean? And hot rods, aftermarket hot rods. The extras were everybody in the movie is good looking too, pretty much out of the teenager supporting cast. Girls were cute, which is in all 50s fashion. The little 50s fucking flat little leather slipper shoes that they wore,
and the dresses with those big ass skirts with all the crinoline underneath.
Yeah, and the plaid kind of colors on the or patterns on the skirts and shit, and the little 50s hair. So, you know, I thought, you know, probably in the day, you know what I mean, it would have been a lot of eye candy for the kids watching it. And teenagers watching it, they would have liked it.
I mean, I can see why this was such a big hit.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, when they originally released it, it was a double feature, because that's what they did. They'd send out the double features, like, to every theater, like, already put together.
Yeah.
And this one was a double feature with I Married a Monster from Outer Space.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the Blob was, like, the second feature, like, you know, the lesser one, but word of mouth got out about this one so much that everybody ended up liking this one a lot more than the other one.
Yeah.
So then they started kind of, like, you know, having this one be the primary feature, like, having it, like, run by itself.
Yeah. Another thing about those days is that everything was for a general audience. So everything was G-rated. So maybe that's why they have that Blob theme that's kind of lighthearted.
Yeah, so it's not too scary, for little kids. I was going to say that might be why. Yeah.
Because you could see from in certain scenes, they knew how to scare you, but it was really pulling its punches through the rest of the movie. They were trying to balance it out, I believe. They didn't want it to be too scary. They're working to make it not so scary.
Yeah. Like, scary enough, like, for a little kid to be like, ooh, but, like, not so scary that they're going to, like, be traumatized for life.
Right. If you were to take remove that restriction from this movie and just put in another score in there, like something out of The Thing or Alien, you could get this to be more scary without changing a frame.
Because, I mean, the idea of being absorbed by a gelatinous mass is pretty scary.
Yeah.
I mean, that would be really painful and really horrifying. And just, like, the idea of it is, like, pretty horrifying.
And it's a mindless alien creature, an amoeba that just absorbs you. You can't reason with it.
That's what I'm saying. And it's so just I think on that instinct. Would be so. Just the very idea of it is scary in itself. So maybe that's why. Maybe they thought the idea was, like, too scary, and they're like, "Well, we need to lighten it up some with this, like, beware the blob."
Yeah, beware the blob.
I do love that song. That was, like, it got up to number 33 on the charts, though. Yeah. It was, like, a big, like, single.
Yeah.
I was gonna say too. Remember when I said earlier that Steve McQueen turned down 10% of the gross?
Yeah.
This movie ended up making $4 million. In 1958.
That's a lot of money.
So, yeah, he would have been...
On a shoestring budget.
He would have been set. Yeah, it cost, like I said, I think it was $110,000, $120,000, something like that.
That's nothing.
And a lot of it, and like I said, the guy that directed it, he wasn't really a film director as such. He directed like educational movies and like religious movies and stuff like that. He was a director, but
it's a good movie.
He hadn't really done this type of thing before.
It's a good movie. You can watch it to this day and still be entertained.
But, yeah, it is still very entertaining.
You see the tricks that they did in the, you know what kind of visual effect that is, but it doesn't matter. The movie's, it's theater.
Yeah.
It has a theatrical tone to it. You know, I wouldn't say it was as good as the 1950s War of the Worlds, but it holds up. You could play those movies back to back and be satisfied with either one of them. You could put this with Forbidden Planet, which was an expensive movie this day, and it would still just kind of fit right in with those. And it's the storytelling and the plausibility and cast.
Yeah, it doesn't... I think the cast goes a long way, and it doesn't look... I mean, it looks... cheap, but it doesn't look so cheap that it like distracts from the story.
Yeah,
like it's obviously low budget, but they did well with the budget that they had.
It's colorful. It you know what I mean? It's colorful. It has certain special effects scenes that are animated, but they look good.
Yeah.
Where the cops shoot the damn transformer to drop the damn power lines, it looked good. When the blob's getting electrocuted, does it look real? No. But it looks like artistic.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Yeah, it's cool looking.
Yeah. I mean, stop motion shit from fucking Clash of the Titans doesn't look real, but it looks good.
I still love those effects, yeah.
Ray Harryhausen stuff.
Yeah, that was one of his last films, actually.
Yeah, it doesn't look real, but it looks good.
Yeah.
You know?
Those are two completely different things.
Two different things.
Yeah. Depending on what you're going for.
Yeah, it's theater.
Yeah.
And it's art. It's not supposed to be realism. Reality doesn't look good anyway. Just watch some police videos of guys actually shooting each other. That does not look as cool as something.
That's what I mean. Reality
movie.
Generally does not look very cinematic.
No, it doesn't look good.
That's why we have all these filters and color correcting and special effects.
And camera angles.
Where you have to like tweak everything because, if you just filmed everything like that, everything would look like crap.
It looks like crap and it's not even exciting.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
You get shot and falls over and dies, and you go, "That's it?" He goes, "Yeah, that's it."
Boring.
Yeah.
Where's the gore?
Yeah.
Come on, I want to see it like get thrown back like that. Yeah. Big spray of blood.
Yeah. I want to see the cop, an angle of the cop with the muzzle swinging around, bearing down on the dude. Fucking with the dramatic music makes it a lot better.
It does. Yeah, it does make it a lot better. Like I said, reality needs like enhancement, like to make it exciting. Because normal reality is like pretty boring.
So they had the technology back then and the storytelling. To get it done, it's just they didn't really want to spend the money on sci-fi. It didn't have a big return, and just the way the system was.
And it was seen as like a kid and teenager genre.
Yeah,
it's like they weren't seen as like serious movies. I kind of feel like sci-fi wasn't really seen as a serious genre until probably the 70s.
Yeah.
Same with horror.
Top of the line 50s sci-fi was fucking War of the Worlds or Forbidden Planet. That they spent money on those.
Which did seem to take sci-fi seriously, which a lot of movies in that era did not.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, this one...
I got to throw in Them. Remember about the giant ass?
I like that one as well.
That was a good one, too. It was black and white. All right. And that started the whole giant animal fucking craze. But Them was done right. They made some giant fucking ants. They made big-ass ants. And then they had the army out there fighting.
Yeah, they didn't just do, like, Tarantula that had an actual tarantula, but
on
they, like...
On a postcard.
On a postcard.
Yeah.
Or they, like, did, you know, the double exposure, where it was, like, he's crawling around over there, holy shit, like, in a totally different movie.
And then they made some big fucking plastic ants, and they articulated, and they moved, and they had them down in what looks like an underground facility, and dudes are shooting them up with fucking Thompson submachine guns and stuff. We need to see Them.
Yeah, that's another one we haven't done. Since we're doing like a lot more 50s kind of stuff, which I like because I feel like that's we've kind of neglected like a lot of... I know we've done a lot of 70s and 80s and 90s to a lesser extent. Done a few 60s movies, but I do kind of feel like we've sort of neglected
Them was my
movies.
Dad's favorite movie when he was a little kid. He said that movie scared the shit out of him. And he said nothing scared him after that up until he got to Alien.
That was when he became a man.
No, I'm saying after that, they said that scared him, and nothing scared him after that until 1970, until Alien came out.
Yeah.
And he said that scared him. Then he took me to go see it. He saw it first, and then I saw it the second time. I loved it.
I
was, 10, 11?
79, that came out.
Yeah, so I was 9. I fucking blew my mind. 9 going on 10. Blew my mind. I loved that movie.
Well, see, I kind of feel like everybody that's into horror has that story. Like, the first time that they saw something that, like, really scared them, but also that was, like, really awesome. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. See, because it, like, opened up all the possibilities.
Yeah. And then he took me to see Krussell in the thing. And that had him, that got both of us, too. That one upset him.
That's a scary
movie. We saw that about three or four times.
That's a scary movie.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So the original Blob, now the remake of the Blob, which also has some comedy in it too, and we talked about that one before. I really like that one just because they took the premise of this gelatinous glob that eats people and like ran with it, and they just like went all the gore and special effects and stuff like that, and they sped up the you know, the pacing and shit like that, so it's much more like an 80s action horror with a lot of gore in it, and I think they did a really good job like updating it. But I mean, the 50s one still has like its charms, especially if you like a lot of 50s movies. Yeah, it is kind of like talky in the middle and stuff like that, but that's okay.
But for the 50s, that was action.
Yeah.
For the 50s, that was a lot of action.
And like I said, the monster in it was a really creative monster and a really scary monster if you think about it, even though it doesn't, it's not a scary movie, obviously. You can show it to your kids, they'll be fine.
A lot of the 50s ones she's talking about where they're just on the phone, it's just white dudes in the office fucking talking to each other on the phone.
In lab coats or in military uniforms.
Yeah, with space shit in the back.
Yelling at each other over the phones in offices.
That and driving cars would be 90% of the damn movie, and the monster was only 10% at the very end. So this one isn't like that.
No.
They are at least running around or going somewhere or looking for something, or they're fighting the damn thing, or they're fighting the blob in certain locations. So by 50 standards, this was an action movie.
I kind of feel like Ed Wood movies, I kind of feel like 80% of his movies are cars pulling up to somewhere and parking.
Leaving. We have to show a shot of him leaving because he's going. Okay.
And it'll be like somebody walking to the car, getting in the car,
we
pulling out of the spot and going.
Yeah. Okay,
I always think of, like, I can't remember, it was an Ed Wood movie, I don't remember which one it was, that they did on MST, and, like, there was a scene like that, and, like, Tom's like, film it all, Ed.
Yeah.
Because he just filmed everything, like, he was, you know.
Yeah.
Padding it out.
Yeah, they were just padding the movie.
Padding the film.
So this one doesn't have a lot of padding. I don't think it had any
padding. Not really.
A couple little love scenes, you might say they were padding. But they were setups for things that happened before. So I think the pacing was pretty good.
Because at the very beginning, I mean, it goes right into, like, Steve McQueen and his girlfriend, like, in the car, making out. That's, like, the first shot, right?
They're not really making out. They made you think that. Remember, nothing really happens. He's trying to talk his way into it.
Well, he's kissing her.
Yeah.
That's what I mean by making out. Yeah. Okay. Because that's why it's like the first shot.
Yeah.
And then they kind of like talk for a second, and then you see like the meteor fall. He's like, oh, we got to go like see what that was.
Well, she started asking him how many times he'd been out here.
Yeah, there is that. But it's only a couple minutes.
Yeah.
It's only
he's like, you come out here a lot type of deal. You know, he's like,
It's like, you're a man horse, Steve McQueen. I know. Yeah.
He's trying to sidestep that shit.
Then they kind of go and then they find the old guy who has his arm eaten, and then they take that guy to the doctor. And then, like I said, there's kind of an extended thing where they do a drag race when really they should be, seeing about the old guy and the doctor. But that's, you know.
Yeah, when I saw it in the 70s as a little kid where it's absorbing his hand and it's on him, it scared me.
Well, yeah, that's a scary concept.
Seven or eight, and I was like, oh, man, yeah.
That would suck.
So I can understand back in the 50s, it would have been even better. Probably.
Yeah, because this was really... Right. I can't think of a movie before this that had an alien like that. I mean, because of budget constraints and stuff like that, they always had aliens that looked like people, like spacemen.
They had faces
or that looked like or that looked like, you know, big bugs, like big animals, like your kind of radiation.
A bug with a human face and some antenna and some big teeth.
Yeah,
and
shit like that. Or like somebody in a gorilla suit with a diving helmet on.
And it obviously doesn't move. There's just a person in there walking.
Right.
Facial expression on it the whole time. It's a suit, you know?
So the fact that something could come down and you just open up a thing and it doesn't look like it would be harmful, it just looks like Jell-O or a jujube or something.
50s aliens were usually never plausible. You know, the basic theme is that this planet doesn't have cute teenage girls on it, so they're here for your cute teenage girls. They're going to take your cute teenage girls back to their planet.
We just came here to get a pallet load of some cute teenage girls to take back to our planet. Our planet who has none.
We don't have cute teenage girls. And you look at the alien and it looks like a damn stalagmite. on the ground, and it's got a face on it with fucking lobster claws, and it's going to crossbreed with a human. You know,
yeah, that was that one. It's like, what the fuck? That was a movie that was, I think that was a Roger Corman one.
Yeah.
Where, what was it? I think it was It Conquered the World. Please correct me if I'm wrong. I think it was It Conquered the World, where the alien looked essentially like a
spike.
A zucchini?
Yeah, or something.
Or something with a face on it. And he kind of walked like that.
Yeah. And it wants your women.
He's super cute.
Yeah. But it's always something like that, you know?
Yeah, so this might have been the first time that actually had sort of like a realistic...
Yeah.
It was a more realistic type of alien that was actually kind of, you know, more scary.
Well, the Martians from War of the Worlds, I guess you could say, were kind of realistic in
a way. Yeah,
yeah. Kind of. You looked at that thing and you go, yeah, it looks like an alien creature. The three, the camera, electric eye, the face. And
but yeah, like I said, I kind of feel like most of them were humanoid or like robots.
Yeah, they're humanoid and robots, and their motivations were totally unrealistic. They're here for women.
Yeah.
You know.
And the blob didn't even have a motivation. No. He just fell here in the earth, and he's like, I'm hungry.
Yeah, mindless.
I'm going to start eating like whoever is around and then not even care about it.
It was just an amoeba.
Yeah. But yeah, so if you haven't seen the original Blob from 1958, it's definitely worth watching. It's super fun from 1958. It's on Tubi at the moment to watch for free, at least as of this recording. So go check it out. Tell us which one you like better. Do you like this one? Do you like the remake? Do you like them both? I like them both, honestly. I do like the remake a little bit better, but just because I'm, you know, I like gory shit. But, you know, so let us know in the comments, and we will see you guys on the next one. Bye.